You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Welcome to the Drop the Needle podcast, your backstage pass to the corporate jungle. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and here, industry titans step up to the mic, sharing their epic journeys. We're hitting the high notes and the low notes of their careers, creating a symphony of success. This isn't just another interview show. It's where truth bombs are dropped and secrets are revealed. So grab your conductor's baton, because who knows, this just might help you compose the next huge hit of your career. Are you ready? Let's go. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Drop the Needle podcast. I am your host, Jim Allstott, and I'm so happy you all decided to join us. I'd like to welcome our guest, Ms. Martha Mary, into the studio today. Martha is an RN who specialized in end-of-life care, hospice care, and also happens to be a graduate of the Vanderbilt Health Coaching Program and is a National Board Certified Health and Wellness Coach. Martha is currently a part of the Vanderbilt Health Affiliated Network, working as a clinical training and implementation specialist. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please welcome Ms. Martha Mary. Hi, Martha.
Hi. How are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
I'm great. I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. Well, thanks for making the time. I know it's difficult with everything going on in your life that to carve out a little bit of time is not the easiest thing. So thank you.
Yeah, it's worth it. It's worth it to get a chance to talk about the things that I love so much.
Excellent. Well, let's go ahead and dive in here. We talked about in the opening being a health and wellness coach. Why don't you take a minute or two to describe for the audience what that is exactly?
Yeah. So health and wellness coaching is a, I would say it's an experience for somebody who wants to make change in their life. It could be about multiple things. We think of health in a holistic manner. So thinking about the whole person. A lot of people, when they hear health and wellness coaching, they think it's about eating right and exercising. It's not that at all. It can be multiple things. It could be spirit and soul. It could be movement, exercise and play, your environment, sleep and rest. So starting in a place that's meaningful to the client to say, hey, I want to make some change here or some improvement, and I'm stuck and I need some help. So it's just such a gratifying process to be able to go on a journey with a client to help them make behavior changes that they just can't do on their own.
That's
without
awesome.
A little extra. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? And I can tell you that I think probably, well, and you'll hear this out in the world, that some of the most successful people, or I would say the majority of successful people, hire coaches to help them reach levels that they never knew were possible before. So that it's kind of interesting. And I personally, I enjoy having a coach. I have a coach. I have a few different coaches, as a matter of fact. And it depends on the area that you feel that you could use a little help with. And I think it's great. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that. What inspired you to pursue the health and wellness coaching certification?
Yeah. So, well, I've always been interested in health my whole life. I have I've got a frog today. Ah. Yeah. I have a bachelor's degree in community health education. I'm always fascinated with the human body, raised my kids, and then went back to school. I graduated nursing school when I was 45 and became an RN. I've always been interested in human potential. I love helping people from a health perspective, but there was always something missing. It's like a person is here and they want to get to here. How do you close that gap? Mm-hmm. And through my work at Vanderbilt with Vanderbilt Health Affiliated Network, we got to see a small presentation by the Vanderbilt Health Coaching Program. And they talked about health coaching and they taught us some basic techniques to how to connect with people to close that gap. And honestly, you know, I think before I had this experience in this training, I wanted to teach somebody something. I wanted to give them something so they could close that gap. But what I learned is it comes from the individual themselves. One, where do they want to start? Two, what are their ideas? And then three, how can I help them use their ideas, put them into action steps so that they can get to where they want to go? It's been so incredibly wonderful to be able to use that with the patients that I work with now in my regular 8-to-5 job. Yeah,
I bet. I bet that's very helpful. Yeah. So the thing that you just mentioned that I think is very important, at least that I've found through coaching and being coached and things like that, is that the ideal way for those, let's not necessarily call it changes, but if you want to call it changes, you can, these modifications, changes in somebody's life, the most effective seem to happen when it comes from that person.
Yeah.
Because I think Jen Grace was the one that says, you always know. You already have the answer. It's just, you know, we don't always have the ability to formulate the plan of attack, right? We know what we need to do.
Exactly.
And sometimes you just don't know how to get there. So that's where you come in and say, oh, you know what? So what's the first thing you do when you meet with somebody? So let's just say that I come up to you and I say, Martha, you know what? I've heard so much about this program. I want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Why don't you maybe take us through the introductory phase, if you will.
Yeah, sure. So when somebody tells me they're interested in health coaching, I have some private clients. The first thing I do is I set up a complimentary 15-20 minute consultation call, mm-hmm. and just describe to them what health coaching is and see if it aligns with what they're looking for. And one thing that's really important that I share with them is health coaching is not prescriptive. It's not like going to the doctor and saying, you know, let's say the person wants to lose weight. We'll use that as an example. Mm-hmm. It's not me as a coach saying you need to exercise this many days for this many minutes. You need to eat this many calories. It's not prescriptive at all. It's once again, looking at what do you want to achieve? What abilities do you have? And where do you want to start? And so it's completely client defined. And I use skillful questions, reflections, reflective statements to help them do what we call use a lot of change talk. So hearing yourself say out loud the changes you want to make and where you want to be is extremely powerful and extremely motivating. It's very affirming as well. Mm-hmm. So it's, I tell them it's about, and the first session is an hour and a half. We look at what we call the wheel of health, where you get to define where, you know, you kind of rate
where you are
each
today,
area, type yeah, of deal. Where you are today in different aspects of your life, and decide where you want to start. And then we do a visioning exercise where we say, if you were to make changes in this area of your life and you didn't do anything 3 years, 1 year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, what would your life look like? If you were able to have your optimal health, we go down another path. Mm-hmm. 1 year, 3 year, 5 years from now, what would your life look like? What do you look like? What is your energy like if you can have the optimal vision that you're looking for? And then we define where they want to start, where you want to start working. And we meet about every other week for 3 to 6 months. I have some clients I've had for a year, and continuing making action steps that they set themselves in each session and move to where they want to be. And as you said, right before you asked me that question, Jim, I think we're all very familiar with, we know what we need to do to change a lot of times. And just having the knowledge isn't enough sometimes. It's, you need some framework around it, maybe some accountability.
Right.
And I tell my clients, you're not accountable to me. You're accountable to yourself. When they set an action step and they come and they say, well, I didn't do it, that's not a bad thing. What did you learn from that? Right. Why didn't you do it? Where could we start instead, you know, to get to the desired outcome that you want?
So, well, because I think in a lot of instances, it's a situation where people, what they'll initially tell you and what is really the case may take some time to get to, because they're getting all of these outside influences where they've heard from other people that you should,
right.
they're getting should on,
right.
instead of really listening to what's important. So yeah, that's very interesting that you say that if somebody comes to one of the sessions and say they haven't done their homework, so, you know, yeah. And we'll use that. Sometimes it's just because, and I'm speaking from personal experience, sometimes it's because it's not your goal.
That's right.
It's somebody else's goal that has been put in front of you. And you think because you've heard it so many times that you're supposed to do that.
Right.
And it may not be. And again, I think that's another opportunity for the coach to say, to open up another set of questions going, let's talk about this for a while. And you started to hit on that. And I know you don't want to go too far into the weeds today. And, yeah. and that's totally fine. And I appreciate that. But the important thing is to know that that's part of what your program does. It actually starts to uncover
right.
and kind of, I guess, in my mind, I'm looking at it as like an archaeological dig. Mm-hmm. You're somewhere and you have the little brush out and you're just like fanning the grains of sand away from something. And you say, that's not what I thought it was. This is what it is.
Right.
It's very cool. And I don't know why that came to my mind.
When you say archaeological dig, you made me, you know, think of another important point that I share with potential clients that, archaeological dig brought to me the mind, the thought of therapy. Health coaching is not therapy, but it feels incredibly therapeutic, because you have small wins and successes along the way. So it feels incredibly therapeutic, and but it's not as deep as therapy. However, you have these wonderful outcomes. And then back to another thing you said about, you know, coming up with your own solution to something. Let me give you an example. So one of the clients that I had wanted to incorporate more movement and physical activity into her life. Mm-hmm. So as we explored that, and she explored, and I asked her some questions, what her action step ended up being was she was going to dance with her baby for 3 minutes every day. So not only did she get the movement, it started very small, and then she built, or she did it multiple times a day. And so not only did she get the movement, but it was just such an incredibly hit the spirit and soul for her as well. Okay. So you can work on one area of your wellness, you know, your health wheel, mm-hmm. and other areas are automatically affected as well.
I could see where they get pulled along for the ride, you know, the positive ride from that.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So as far as the certification itself, and I know being board certified is an entirely different animal than some of the certification courses, and taking nothing away from other programs, but board certification adds a whole new wrinkle for that. Can you maybe tell people what that entailed, the board certification?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a nationally board certified health and wellness coach. And first, you have to have a certain background, associate's degree or bachelor's degree in a health related field. I went to the Vanderbilt Health Coaching Program. We had massage therapists, we had physician, we had nurses, we had Ayurvedic medicine people. So all different kinds of disciplines, wow, as long as it's health related. And it's a 2-year program. I keep telling them you should have given me a master's degree because it was very intensive. Yes. And I wish I would do after work, because I do work full time and on the weekends. And as part of that program, their training program, you are paired in a triad with other people going through the program. And we had to coach each other and get practice all the way through. And then once I completed the program, I had to have 70 sessions of health coaching under my belt to actually graduate from the program, plus a lot of other paperwork that I had to complete things that I had to submit. Then I had to apply for the certification exam and sit for that, which was about a 2-hour exam. And to take the exam, you have to meet all of those requirements that I just mentioned ahead of time as well.
Those are prerequisites.
Exactly. Yeah. Anybody can just take that exam. You have to be a graduate of a program. You have to have, I think it's 50 hours of coaching session. You know, of course, Vanderbilt went above and beyond with the 70, which prepared me well. So
that's not surprising, but I mean, that is impressive. I know from that board certification it's not easy, because you're taking essentially that 2 years of your efforts and putting it in to 2 hours that you have to recall everything.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. And I'm raising my hand in this. I don't remember what I ate yesterday or did yesterday. And that's yesterday. Yeah. Imagine going back 2 years. That's a lot. That's kind of tough to wrap my mind around, but that's just me. Although my mind's like a little sprung mousetrap these days, but that's a topic for another discussion.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing about the test is, and being prepared for the test, is having all of those hours of coaching before I even sat for the test. Mm-hmm. The test incorporates all of those things that you learn, most of them.
Okay. From a practical approach.
Exactly. Okay. So, you know, you're well prepared in that way. I still had to study, don't get me wrong. But and then of course it's a multiple choice and it's a critical thinking test. So there may be 5 answers and 3 of them are right, but you have to choose which one is the most right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd be so screwed.
I'm used to it with nursing. So it's the same with the NCLEX. Yeah.
I bet. Yeah. So as far as the certification is concerned, how do you think that's going to impact your career moving forward?
Well, it definitely, you know, I don't want to go anywhere with the current role that I have now. I love my work that I have with Vanderbilt Health Affiliated Network, but it definitely helped me. I recently got a promotion at work as a clinical training implementation specialist. Thank you. And I'm actually sort of a coach for our team, the nursing team that I work with. Mm. So I'm able to use those skills, and I'm going to be able to teach them some of the skills that I learned in the coaching program that they can use when they work with the patients that they call on the phone. So that's been helpful to me. And I use these skills in every aspect of my life. I use the communication skills that I learned with my friends, with my colleagues, with my kids and my spouse. I mean, it's just, it's really the most valuable training and education I've ever gotten in my entire life. It's made me a better communicator.
I believe that. I think it's whenever you can work on those skills and hone those skills, you're going to get better, right?
Yeah.
You're definitely going to get better.
Yeah.
So as far as the skills that you're talking about in the coaching, do you, can you share some of those key skills that you learned that you believe are going to be very valuable to your team?
Yeah.
And I guess your coaching career too.
Sure. So the first and one of the most powerful skills that we have and that we use as coaches is reflective listening. Mm. So when a client speaks or a coworker or whoever I'm working with, it doesn't matter whether it's a client or, you know, one of my teammates, if a question is asked and they respond, the first thing I'll do is I will rephrase what they said. It could be in one word, it could be in multiple words, it could be with a metaphor, to let them know that I've actually heard them. Mm-hmm. And you know that they feel validated and heard when the response is exactly, you know, it's like you hit the nail on the head, you heard me. So the reflective listening, also when you use that reflective listening, people, once they hear your reflection, they tend to talk more. And once again, as I said, with coaching, change talk is what is so incredibly powerful and helpful. So if they're talking about something that's positive and where they want to go and what they're visioning, and you're doing that reflecting, they keep talking and talking and hearing themselves say out loud the things that matter to them. The other important skill, there are many that we use, but the other one is just powerful questions. So most of our questions start with how or what. They're open-ended questions. So once a client decides where they want to do some work, I may start with the question, you know, what's important to you about getting good sleep? If that's what they say they want to work on, what's important to you about good sleep? And then they would respond, I would reflect, and I just keep reflecting until they're done talking about it. And then I may ask another question that takes them a little bit deeper until we distill it down to, how would you feel about setting an action step in this area? And then they get to make that choice. They get to define the step, and then that's their assignment over the next 2 weeks.
Off to the races.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Yeah, I can see where that'd be beneficial in basically all walks of life, right?
Yeah.
That's cool.
And once again, as you're distilling them down, we call that the funnel for focus of the session. The client is hearing themselves say out loud why this change is important and valuable to them as an individual, and they're defining it. So once again, it's that self-determination theory.
Excellent.
At play, yeah.
So how do you envision the utilization of your coaching certification playing out over the next few years?
Yeah. As I said, I work full time. I have clients that I take on in the evenings and the weekends. Mm-hmm. So definitely building my client base a little bit more. And then as that continues to build, you know, I'm nearing retirement age. It's within the next 10 years or so. This is what I want to do full time eventually, because it just brings me I swear I leave a session feeling just as good as my clients do. It brings me such joy. I see people make real change, which brings happiness to their lives, and it's addictive.
Well,
and
sure.
I want more of that. You know, it just feels really, really good. And it feels, you know, like I said, it does. And it's like, you know, before I had this skill, it's like, how do you get people from here to there? This is how you do it. And the thing is, it's not on me. It's on them. I just provide the framework for them.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's huge, because that's long lasting or sustainable change occurs when that is going on versus, so as you know, because we know each other, I went through the big change in my physical being, going from nearly 400 pounds, losing 150 pounds and keeping it off. That had to happen, not for somebody else, but for myself.
Yeah.
Because throughout the years, I don't know if you probably never had to deal with a weight issue or anything like that. But if you had, a lot of times people will lose weight for somebody else, either someone else or for something else, right? And it's never, for me, it was never a long lasting solution. It just didn't last very long, because I think the reason is because it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't by me. It was like, well, if I do this, then that person's going to, and if I do this, then I'll be able to. And that was sort of true, not for the person, but for, if I do this, I'll be able to. And the I'll be able to was walk easier, you know, do things that other people could do easily, yeah. or at least do, or hell, even going to a ride at Universal Studios. I'll never forget standing in, I think it was actually at Disney World, where we stood in line for 5 hours. 5 hours, and it was on the what's the one with the blue people, the movie, you know what I'm talking
Avatar?
About? Avatar, thank you.
Yes.
So it was that one of the Avatar rides, and we were, you know, I'm not exaggerating, it was 5 hours we were in this line. Yeah. And we get up to the where the ride is, and they let you in on the ride. And I got on the machine, and the safety mechanism couldn't latch.
Yeah.
And I said, just push. So there were two people pushing on this safety, you know, getting it to try to close, and it was not closing.
Yeah.
So I had to get off. And talk about a shitty... Yeah. A shitty thing, not only waiting for 5 hours, but then the entire, like the embarrassment of not being able to fit in a ride that the rest of my family was going on, then without me.
Right.
And you know, one of my boys is like, oh, I'll stay back. I was like, absolutely not. Get on. Enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And tell me all about it when you get off. And they were all nice going, you wouldn't like, it wasn't that great. And then behind them, that was the greatest thing in the world. Somebody else was saying that. Yeah. And I was just like, I appreciate it, guys. Yeah. Thanks. You know, very kind to not do that. But anyway.
Yeah. You know, when you said something there too, you made me think of just another very, very important part of coaching. You know, you described that experience and how much when you do it for yourself, when you realize what is the true reason you want to do something, that can be very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. But you have to discover that yourself. And and people usually do once they do a few action steps and they're like, this isn't working. And then it's like, well, why is this not working? You know, right. And kind of dig a little bit deeper. But the other thing is, you talked about your family. So coaching is about attaching the changes you want to make to your strengths and your values. So it sounds like spending time with your family is something important to you and having those kinds of experiences. So if you can attach behavior change to strengths and values, there's much likely more of a chance that those changes will stick.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You're 100% right. And that's, I guess, 4 years for me now.
Yeah.
That things have kind of stayed. And that was the difference for me. So in the beginning, in our intro, we talked about hospice care or end of life care. Yeah. Can we talk about that for just a few minutes?
I would love to. Yeah.
Okay. So we talked about it before because about episode 12 of the Drop the Needle podcast, I made a conscious effort to change direction. And it was something that was like inside of me to do. And it was to go off more into a spiritual direction as it relates to the show. And it was really just an effort because I've got a natural curiosity and admiration for various people with gifts, let's call it. That I wanted to go through this, and also a situation where if other people had this curiosity or they were having these experiences, to know that they weren't crazy or they weren't odd and they had a place to go. And if it just resonated with one person, hey, job is done, right?
Yeah,
and
just sure.
felt good about it. So a lot of the folks that I've had on are recently are mediums or have some sort of gift, intuitive gift. And that intuitive gift usually accompanies either what's called an NDE or near-death experience or something of that nature. And I've been reading a lot lately about, you know, what essentially I'll give you a great example. There's going to be a gentleman on the show. His name's Joe McQuillan, and Joe has written a couple of books. He's actually writing, or he and his son are writing their third book. And the interesting thing is that his son, Christopher, is dead. His son, mm-hmm. Christopher, died as a result of an accident, January 3rd, I think it's 2016, mm-hmm. passed away, drowned. He and three of his friends drowned. And his first book was in Search of Christopher on the Other Side or something like that. I don't have the exact title, but it was how could he connect with his son? And that's one of those things that is really interesting, because that started to open the door for me for other books and the experience. And having I had two relatives go through hospice care. And I'm going to tell you right now, whoever is involved with hospice care is a special individual. They are angels that walk around on earth, because it is so much, because you're not only caring and respecting the wishes of the patient, but you're also helping the family along that ride too. So I remember when my dad was in hospice care, but he was in assisted living before he went into the hospice facility. He was only in the hospice facility for about 10 hours and then he passed, which is fine. But I remember I was in the room and my dad was having a conversation, eyes closed, and he was having a conversation. And I said, what did you say? Dad, are you talking to me? No. And his eyes were closed. Like his body was shutting down, you know, and he was having a full on conversation with somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I was the subject of that conversation, making sure that I was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And I heard my dad answering, yes, yes, I took care of that. Yes, yes, yes. I made sure everything is going to be okay. We're okay. And that that's actually hard for me to even say right now, because having seen that. So that was one. My grandmother was another, and it was really helpful to me. But I'm curious, is that typical? Is that something that you've seen quite frequently?
Yeah, I'm so grateful that you were there with your father end. Yeah,
me too.
But yes, I've been with many, many people when they're actually in the process of what we call actively dying. Mm. And I've seen some very interesting things. A lot of times people do speak, or it's like you're hearing one side of a conversation with somebody from their past. A lot of times it's the mother. I've heard that a couple of times. Mm. I've seen people reaching, looking like they're completely focusing on something. One gentleman, like right as he passed, turned his head and looked up at the ceiling, and there were three of us there with him, and we all looked up there too. I mean, it was that striking. Mm. And then his head turned and he was gone, you know? Mm. So definitely see things like that. Not everybody, not with everyone, but mm-hmm. those things do occur for sure.
That's so interesting to me. And I guess that, you know, there are those that, I'm not trying to impart my beliefs on anyone else here. So hear me clearly with that, because that's not my job. You believe is what you believe. But I do believe we have a team. And so the other interesting thing is that there's some speculation that people know when they're going, not the day, but they know death is coming soon.
Yes, yes.
And so my dad was like that. My mom was definitely like that. My mom actually died in a car accident as a result of a car accident. But one of the things that she had said to, she would get on a phone call with my grandmother and her sister, my mom's sister, my Aunt Shell. Every morning they'd talk, and they'd have, it was a three-way call conversation. That was really the cool hip thing in the 80s, where you could do that three-way calling. And I remember my aunt saying that my mom said that, you know, I'm going to die soon. And she's just like, don't be ridiculous. And she said, no, I had a dream that, you know, God told me that all my list was completed. Everything on my list was done and that it was time to go. And I remember my Aunt Shell said, well, don't be ridiculous. Just go back to sleep and dream another dream. And my mom said, yeah, that wasn't my list. That wasn't my list. And I can't do that. And then the next week she was in a car accident and she passed away. So it's all of those things, you know, I don't believe in coincidence. I really don't. I think things are there for a reason. And, you know, what is it? A reason, the season, or your life, you know, people pop in, in that instance. But I'm really referring to the fact that this happens more than once. It's not an isolated incident where you can say, oh, well, that's a one-off. It doesn't happen like that.
Right.
And so I do think that there is that. Has anyone ever said that to you? Any of the patients would they know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
many times it's so interesting because the patients a lot of times will try to protect the family. So now, you know, I've cared for people in all different stages of hospice care. I mean, I may get them when they're still able to walk and talk, but they qualify for hospice care. And then with them through their decline, like maybe now they're bedbound. And then, you know, there's definitely a process that's very common for everybody that you go through if you have a tapering to the end of life. There are you stop eating and drinking, you stop interacting with the world, you start sleeping more. Yes. As they're nearing those three, you know, there are other signs too, but they're those three things. A lot of times the person will know they're dying, but they don't want to talk to their family about it, you know? And the family doesn't think the patient knows they're dying, you know? So you have to kind of tread this fine line and say, they know, they just want you to be with them, you know, now and in the most impactful way, just be with them and acknowledge it's not a scary thing. I've never seen anybody wide awake and afraid at the moment that they passed. The body has a beautiful way of shutting down when you go through a hospice sort of death. You mentioned that your father was in a hospice facility. So I was able to care for people when they were in the hospital on hospice and also when they were at home. And pretty much the only time they're in a hospital type of setting or a hospice facility setting is when the medications that we give at home orally are not effective enough. So if somebody's extremely agitated or in extreme pain,
you have to go
they need IV medications. But the majority of the people that I took care of, and I would say the majority of patients who pass in hospice do pass at home, they want to be at home. They want to be in their rooms. They want to be with their with their family. And they know they're dying. And I never worked with anybody who was afraid to die either. I think by the time they get that close, they're ready.
Yeah,
they're ready. Yeah.
Yeah. It was interesting. So you mentioned the drug. I remember with my grandmother, and I'll wrap it up right after this so we can get on to our musical questions, which was a little bit more uplifting, I hope. But I remember when my grandmother was going through hospice care and in her house, and she had morphine in a bottle up on the counter, and she was taking that obviously for pain, and it just tasted so bad, and she's just like, oh, I can't, but I'm in so much pain. So I was crushing up Starlight mints into it to make it a little bit more palatable for her. But I remember that, and I was so thankful because my grandmother gave me a gift to be with her. I was with her in her very last breath that she took, and that was a gift to me, and it was a gift on a number of levels, but I was there sharing that with her and comforting her, letting her know everything was going to be okay. But I wasn't able to do that with my mom because mm-hmm. my mom died on the side of the road in an ambulance.
Yeah.
And I couldn't say goodbye.
Yeah.
But I could say goodbye. And that I was was I sad that my grandmother died? Absolutely. Because she stepped in and was my sounding board after my mom had passed. But I wasn't sad. I know it sounds funny, but I was grateful, I guess is the best way I could say it, is that I was grateful to have had that time to say goodbye because I didn't. And it was like she was giving that to me to almost make up for the fact that I wasn't able to say goodbye to my mom when my mom passed. So it was kind of cool.
That is a gift. One other gift that happens many times, not with all patients, but with many, mm-hmm. is it's what's called a rally. So it would happen a lot with my patients who are in home hospice a few days before they would die, usually within the last 3 days before they actually died. They would have this like resurgence of energy and alertness, and it's almost like they were getting better. And really able to interact with their family. Yeah. Well, I would just tell families, I'm like, this is a gift. I mean, they've been laying here pretty much unconscious and they're like, families are confused though, because they're like, okay, maybe we need to get them off hospice. Maybe we need to be feeding them. It's like, no. This just take this moment, these moments that you're getting and relish them. This means a turn is coming. They're getting ready to turn and really get close to what we call the active dying process. So I love hospice. I could talk hospice all day. I still get a lot of calls from people sort of in a consultative matter, you know, like, tell me what happens. You know, families are so afraid it means that you're giving up. It's not about giving up. It's about acknowledging a point in life and making the time. It's about quality over quantity, making the time they have left as beautiful and wonderful as possible, and allowing, once again, this relates to coaching, allowing the patient to call the shots. Let them decide where they want their bed. Let them decide if they want to take a sip of water, not forcing anything on them. Mm-hmm. That is the only sense of autonomy and control they have left in this last short time.
Yeah.
And
that is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is. I can't say enough good things about it.
Well, thank you for sharing that with me. I do appreciate that. And I would love to have an entire episode talking about those experiences. Maybe we will down the road, and I'll bring in somebody else, a medium or something, and we could have a three-way podcast, and it could be kind of fun. I think that'd be really fun.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Yeah. I'm going to hold you to that, by the way.
Yes, so I'm down for it.
Okay, cool. Well, as anyone could tell you that's ever listened to the podcast before, this is the section when I ask the guests some musical questions, and this is pillar three of our show. And as I mentioned regularly, music is the tie that binds, and I believe everyone has a soundtrack that accompanies their life if they just take a moment to think about it. So are you ready for those musical questions?
Oh, yes. I made a cheat sheet.
Yeah, perfect. No, uh-huh. No, you know what? So I know Martha from Illinois State University, where she was involved with a choir and music, and I was too, as well as football.
It's the tie that found us, Jim.
It is. It actually is.
It really is. Music.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. Yeah. So what was the first song you fell in love with from the radio?
Okay. So I grew up in Central Illinois. And I was thinking about this. My dad was the music teacher at school, so he actually taught choir.
Oh, cool.
And in the summers, he would be.
Look at that!
That sign? Yeah, that from my side.
It was on my side, but it must have been. Anyway,
I know. Well, okay. Let's see what else we can make appear. Yes. As a teacher in the summers, he'd have summers off. He would be the manager of the swimming pool, which is basically in my backyard, the community pool. Mm-hmm. And so WLS would be playing. It's when they had music. Yes, exactly. And terrible songs, but the ones that stick in my mind. So Rock the Boat by the Hughes Corporation that came out in 1973. Sweet. Yeah, I had to have been five, so I can remember that. And then This song, I have no, I didn't know what the lyrics mean, but I still love this song today. Afternoon Delight by Starland Vocal Band came out in 1976.
That was gonna be, how did I know that was going to be that song?
You know what? I think it's the harmonies. It's the harmonies all the way through and then that very last riff that they do. I was singing it just a little bit ago.
I got to tell you, so that reminds me of the movie Anchorman when they bust that up.
Yes.
That is absolute
menace. That's my childhood at the Octavia Pool.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So as far as like road trips, in like summer road trips and things like that, did your family have a song that everyone would just belt it out?
No. I mean, I was thinking about that because I knew that would be a question. No, but I do want to tell you, when I think about my family and music, I think about Christmas music because, well, my dad was always in like musical theater and plays, you know, as an adult, and I got to go to those things. So music was a big part of our life, you know, with him being a music teacher. Mm-hmm. But we always had these records. They were either True Value or Firestone Christmas albums. So when I think of my childhood and family music, I think of those albums, which are always like mixtapes, Frank Sinatra, Barbara Streisand, Nat King Cole, Ella Fitzgerald, where are you? What are you doing New Year's Eve is one of my most favorite songs.
Oh, that's a great song.
Eartha Kitt, Mel Torme, you know, the Robert Shaw Chorale. So that to me is childhood and family together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's very cool. I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah.
So, let me ask you this. When you were in, let's say, high school, let's go to senior year in high school.
Okay.
What was the song in senior year of your high school senior year that people were just like belting out? You were in the car with your friends going, yeah, let's just scream this song.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was
Oh, gosh. So the very first thing that came to mind when I thought of that question, and this didn't come out my senior year, but we would crank this in the car. Paradise by the Dashboard Light by Meatloaf. Ask me why, but we just would do that one. The Thriller album was big when I was in high school.
Yeah.
We listened to Alabama a lot. The Eagles' Greatest Hits, AC/DC, Led Zeppelin, Kashmir. Loved that song.
Oh, yeah.
We would do what we call riding around. We would ride around town, listening to music, full blast. Absolutely.
Yep.
Prince, huge.
Oh,
you know, Kiss, the song Kiss from that. Billy Squire, that was a big cranker for me.
The Stroke
Yeah, and Lonely is the Night. And,
ooh, that's a good song, too.
Everybody Wants You, but I would change it to Everybody Wants Me. You know, my friend had to remind me of that. So, yeah.
That's hilarious.
But when
There's
I was a senior.
No vanity involved.
No, not at all. When I was a senior, Addicted to Love by Robert Palmer was a big hit, and These Dreams by Heart. You know, the Robert Palmer Addicted to Love, that was with the girls in black dresses with the red lips, if you think of the video, you know, so.
I had a buddy, his name was Doug, he used to go into the bars at that time and say, might as well face it, you're addicted to the Doug. And he'd point to himself and dance. Talk about a guy that
vanity,
was
vanity, right, everybody
oh
wants
God.
Me, uh-huh,
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So then coming from high school into college, did your musical tastes change at all, or did they stay kind of in that vein?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't remember music that much from college, believe it or not, because I was so involved in music myself, like with Madrigals and concert choir and stuff like that. So I was trying to think, the Les Mis soundtrack was huge in my life then, and I was really into The Doors in college. I think the movie come out.
Yeah, Val Kilmer.
Exactly. And so then I did a deep dive into The Doors and listened to that a lot. So those were the things that come to mind from that time.
That's very cool. So what is the song that would best describe you or your journey that you're on currently?
Oh my gosh. I can't think of one. There were so many. I mean, I have indulgent songs that I listen to that just make me feel really good, like Chandelier by Sia.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe that's me. I want to swing from the chandelier.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, that's fine.
The Commodores, Sail On. I listen to that sometimes. I'll just put it on. And once again, the harmonies there. That's from 1970. Rage Against the Machine, Bulls on Parade, Killing the Name of, Wake Up. I mean, those are things that I put on when I want to feel good.
Yeah.
So I just have, I just take samples from all different genres. It's not one song for me. It's like, I can't pick a favorite color.
Relate.
I love all colors. It's kind of the same with music for me.
Music is a really difficult one to pin down for me too. I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
I really am. I completely understand that. Yeah. I'm going to ask one more musical song, but what we're going to do is we'll incorporate all of the songs that you have on your playlist for the episode. But I'm going to ask this song or this question. And it's actually one of my favorites because there are songs that you hear that ring so true that they can stop you right in your tracks. And the lyrics of the song sound like they were either written by you or specifically for you. What's that song?
Oh my gosh. Once again, you're really stumping me on this one. Let me look at my list and see if anything comes out.
Yeah, sure.
Gosh, I love Foreigner. I love Journey. They're on my list here. Open Arms is a beautiful song, but we would sing Broken Arms, so that kind of ruins that. Let's see. I don't know. Addicted to Love? I don't know. I can't choose.
Okay.
I can't think of one. There's so many pieces of different songs that are pieces of me. I think that's why I like so many different genres as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me, when it comes to those types of that question, I would definitely go towards country music because the lyrics typically tell a story, you know, but that's where I'm coming from on that. And
yeah,
but just like you, I have so many that I absolutely love and gravitate towards for whatever reason, whether you want to get pumped up or feel happy, or sometimes you just want to wallow.
Yeah, exactly.
And you listen to shit and you go, oh, okay, I'm done with that. I got it out of me. Let's go.
You know what song I love? Let It Be. That's a song.
That's a great song. Yeah, it's a great song to throw in there. I know that one of the guests had used that. I had asked a question previously, if there was one song that you think could change the world, the lyrics could change the world if people just took the time to listen to it. And Let It Be is one of those types of songs.
Well, and you'll never hear it the same again, because when I sing it, it's when I find myself in times of trouble, Martha Mary comes to me speaking words of wisdom. Oh, Let It Be. Sorry, just ruined it for you forever.
Yeah.
But it's true. Okay. That could be my coaching song. There you go. Let it be. Yeah.
Let it be. Mm-hmm. Let it be you.
Yeah. That's right.
Why not?
Yeah.
Well, it's just about time to cue the music for today's episode, but don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to the Drop the Needle podcast to stay up to date on the latest episodes. I'd also like to take a moment to thank everyone again for tuning in today, and I hope you all enjoyed this episode of the Drop the Needle podcast. I'd also like to thank our special guest, Ms. Martha Mary, for being on our show today. Martha, can you tell us how people can get in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. They can email me directly at mailingmartha@gmail.com, just like you're mailing me a letter, mailingmartha@gmail.com. Fantastic. If they have questions about coaching, hospice, anything that I can help them with, I'm happy to.
That's wonderful. Thank you for giving us that information. Yeah. And I invite you to head on over to the show notes, where there's going to be a link to the playlist from today's episode. And you'll also find Martha's email address on there as well. I'll make sure that is on there. And I would definitely encourage folks to reach out to her and schedule a time, because everybody can, in my humble opinion, everybody could use a little coaching from time to time. All right, my Drop the Needle posse, like Billy Joel says, from the highs to the lows to the end of the show, this is the end of our show. Until next time, this is Jim Allstott wishing you infinite health and happiness and the perfect playlist for your life. Thank you again for being the best part of us. Catch you next time.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold.
Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.